A friend of mine said, "Where do we start tonight?" And I said to him, "Well, I think I'll really start from our Alabama setting." See, for a number of us at this table, this is sort of like an reunion, sort of an Alabama reunion. Joe Elwanger, George Herbeck, Will Hertzfield, myself, have all been people at one time or the other have been in Alabama. Strangely enough, we might be able to say at this conference that we might honor Mr. Wallace for having been a backdrop against which so much learning went on. And so in honor of the group and of Mr. Wallace, I would like to suggest a story that was going around Alabama a short time ago. It said that Mr. Wallace died and passed to that great beyond. When he awakened, he found himself on a golden street. And he looked all around him. He realized where he was. And being as surprised as you are, said, I made it. He got up and started running down the golden street and saw a curve. And when he made the curve, there were the pearly gates in front of him. And with one last burst of energy, he fell at the gates, started beating on him, saying, let me in, I made it. There was a pause, and then the voice of St. Peter came from the inside and said, "Who's that out there beating on them there pearly gates?" So there was a longer pause, and Wallace said, "Forget it." Sort of living in this three-storied world of the Christian faith, when a man leaves earth, denies heaven, there is not much left. Given a very look at the kind of world that we haven't left yet, there is a central question for us in terms of that Alabama scene and where most of us are now. For in a very real way, when we look at our involvement in Alabama and the movement of action with which we are part, we're all in a major northern city. And Selma, Alabama is a symbol of that drive in the Southland. And Detroit, Michigan is a symbol of the new urban world. In another sense, Selma, Alabama is the symbol of a great Christian nonviolent move based upon great moral understanding, a new thrust whereby that men could be free. In another sense, Detroit is the scene of a new action based upon the old guidelines that this culture knows so well, those of violence. We have to ask ourselves a very important question if we're to be serious. How, in fact, did we get from a massive nonviolent movement that knew its high water mark in Selma, Alabama, where the great prelates in the Christian church came together and sat down in little rickety rattan bottom chairs in a black church in the black belt of a black state? Went from there to where we were able to see the burning of a part of a city as men quested for that same freedom and try to deal with it in quite another way. There were a number of assumptions upon which we moved that were found to be wrong. But centrally, it seems as though that what things move around is this kind of pivotal point. Is that what is being said today by black people and poor people, but particularly by black people because we're the dynamic for any change in this nation. Is what's really being said, whether you look at the black Muslims at this end, to the black nationalists, to SCLC in terms of fulfillment of personality, to a mere job-getting program as the Urban League, or even to the NAACP. What's really being said by black community today is that word which is not heard behind the actions, behind the program, behind the understanding, behind the violence, there's a word that is not heard. And when the press begins to give us the story, the press seems to spell it out as hate whitey, burn baby burn, and separatism. Where, in fact, this is not what is being said. What is really being said by black community today is we will burn if necessary in order to control our own piece of turf. It does not say hate whitey per se. It says that white racism is the cause of each and every problem we have. And that's not to be denied American society. It is saying that we must be in charge of our own affairs, and that if necessary, we will do whatever, and if it means burn, baby, burn, we must use this strategy in order to build, baby, build. So that behind this, there is a single word that says independence. What black people are saying across this land today is we will be independent regardless of the cost. And the problem being is that every institution within this culture is racist orientated, and the answer to black independence is white charity. There is a sickness in the land called charity. Is not an accident, it seems, in terms of the Anglo-Saxon use of the New Testament, that Corinthians got interpreted as charity instead of love. There is a sickness that says that we will give you what we want you to have on our terms. We will make the guidelines for you, little children, because you don't know enough to do it for yourself. We must do it for you. We will give you handouts, charity. But we will not allow, in fact, we will perpetuate and destroy any attempt you make to be men in your own right. We could document this with case after case. Point being is that there's a tremendous clash between the cry of black independence and institutionalized white charity that deals out of a racist context. And that here is the crux of the matter. In that confrontation, we begin to understand then where the guidelines for the new thing must come. Not only the new thing, but the now thing. And if we're going to program in fact, we must deal with that. For it will not matter to us if we put several billions of dollars, the cost of Vietnam, into programs within the ghetto, if in fact those programs do not follow new guidelines, they will be of no value. Detroit had an excellent mayor. Detroit had all the government programs. And yet Detroit burned. For it is not important that one has programs. It's important upon what basis those programs developed and what are the guidelines that make them real. And that if we really think that as the church, that we're going to go in as missionaries to a new Congo, with the old charity guidelines, we will come out disillusioned and talking about they don't want us, where in fact we never planned for them but for us. There is a charity that is a sickness that says we will not allow a man to be independent, and that what we're doing is not for the people we serve or supposed to serve, but in the process we're serving ourselves. For it makes us feel good
to be the missionaries to a new Africa. And as a result of these kind of guidelines, there's very little place even on that turf for a goodly number of white people, whether they be church or non-church, to even work today. So from this, we begin to understand then that there must be a new set of guidelines. And let us look. The first of these is control. What the ghetto is saying today is that we must be in control of everything that happens on black turf. We must be in charge of the ground itself. We must be in charge of every institution that serves it. We must be in charge of the jobs thereupon. We must be in charge of the processes that run through it. Is built upon an understanding that black people in this nation are a colonial people, and that white racism has mined for profit black people every day. Every day there is the going into the ghetto with the empty bag and coming out with the filled bag. Every day there is the grocery store and every other store and operation in the ghetto run by white people that charges and overcharges for every item which Negroes have to buy. We call it the color tax. And that when we begin to look at the turf, those run-down buildings are owned by white people on the North Shore instead of black people on the South Side. We begin to see the goodly number of liquor stores. They're not of our doing. It is that the political process is so run that if you are white and in, you can get a permit to run a liquor store on the South Side or the West Side. We begin to look at the police power, and it is a colonial army of racists with 45s on their hips that are turned loose to put niggers in their place. But what we're really saying is that white people in this nation are too insensitive, too brutal, too violent, too sick to be in charge of any operation that deals with the destiny of black people. So that control of every operation within that ghetto must be in the hands of black people. It's not a matter of hate, it's a matter of control. What we're talking about is the matter of powerlessness and power. So that when we begin to talk about black power, we must see it in the context of control. For the purpose for black power is to have control of our own piece of turf so that in total community there can be shared power. For that does not exist today. There is Polish power and Catholic power and Jewish power and Italian power and Protestant power. This nation is made up of blocks of power. And in order to in fact deal realistically with the problems, there must be the establishment of black power, not as an end in itself, but so there can be control of turf. So from there one can begin to build a base from which realistic inner action can go out. So that in fact, integration is dead. But coming from our understanding, and in a Lenten season, I'm not gonna preach that, that we must understand that in fact, integration may be dead, but that there is something deeper on which our lives flow anyway. And that in order to deal with ministry, we must understand that integration was only a term, a means, but that a far deeper level, that you and I must see the resurrection of inner dependence, not dependence, which is out of a charity context, but an inner dependence that ties us at a deeper level, but upon which power is shared, and that can only be controlled by a love relationship, as power meets power as man stands on his own feet. As a child of God who knows the fulfillment of his own person and speaks to another man face to face on the basis of what he wants and feels, what he wants to do and to be and become, that is not controlled by another man, but is limited only by God himself. Now let's ask ourselves some questions. If in fact that we want control, control for what? Control of what? Power for what? Independence to do what? And the second guideline is that our central task in terms of ministry is to take a non-community and make it a community. That, in a sense, white persons buy a community. Negroes buy a house and a piece of land as a result of the fact that public services are not fair. Interaction is not fair. Job security is not there. Many other things are not there that in fact make community. And that if we're to deal realistically and we're to think in terms of control of a piece of turf, what this means in fact is that there must be the development of community from a non-community. White racism and charity guidelines have made black communities non-community. And the central job is to create community so that as power is important to control, so unity is important to community. I'm not saying this because I like the sound of unity and community. The logic came first, fortunately. And to order to do this, there must be the creation of a new ethnic concept of reality. For your racism has created a situation that has demoralized Negroes for 400 years. Till in the ghetto there's an expression, or used to be, new sense of ethnic reality is changing that. Used to be an expression that if you're white, you're right. If you're brown, hang around. If you're yellow, you're mellow. And if you're black, get back. Because of that whole matter of turning in on oneself because there was nothing in which to take pride and which the power of God so controlled the action that we were segmented and separated. So that if you were light, the power structure gave you a job more quickly than if you're black and still die. So that you can look at black community and take it apart according to color, and it'll almost fit income grouping. Because that income is decided by white persons, not by black ability. We begin to see that this sense of ethnic reality must come to us in a number of forms. You will be dealing with it in one of the strategies that men like Hertzfeld are gathering together to develop black ecumenicity. So that black groups within the structures of the church can in fact make the church realize that it has been more concerned about its race than its religion, been more concerned about its flesh than its faith. And begin to deal from that kind of perspective. For real power comes out of community, and there can't be community without that kind of unity. We must break down the old barriers that racism has formed within black community to create a unity so that we can be able to deal. What this really means is that growth is community growth. No man in fact really goes but so high by himself. He grows in relationship to community. And without that sense of community, personality development can only go so high. Economic development can only go so high. We must have it in order to really survive in the midst of a racist culture. That's what the last 10 years has said to us. The last 10 years of failure has said to us. And we must find new roles for the black bourgeois, that they begin to stop imitating whites and start using their resources and special abilities to serve black people. And that if we're to really look at this seriously in terms of community, we must be able to find the means whereby that everything we do in of itself, in the kind of things we put together, create new values. The community is created by value, basically. And that the strategies we form cannot in fact be based on the old value structure. That we must develop some new understandings of community, some new developments, so that that which happens there serves new formulations that will be basically contradictory to this culture, but must nevertheless happen to create new values within. So that hopefully we will develop a large base, a kind of new program of a size that will speak not only to black people, but to this total nation. For we will find ourselves at odds end with the kind of formula economically for this nation that says MCM takes the money, materials, use it in such way that things are made into what makes the most money. And that what black community is saying is that we must so restructure our value system that we take money, develop goods that meet human needs. Because of the value system of this culture, it is more important that we produce goods for Vietnam, and one reason there is a Vietnam. Because it makes far more money than if we produce goods for human needs. Some change in the value structure itself at the local level as well as at the national level. Our ministries must begin to form this. So that as we speak of those ministries then, we have to then come to the third guideline. That as institutional people, we have to move from therapy to strategy. For largely, we are therapy for this culture. We're the nice little people that say the nice little statements from a pulpit every morning that mean very little to anybody but old ladies. We bend being blowout candles and go through kind of forms that mean very little to anybody in fact, except those who have it made and are trying to find some excuse for why they have it made and are continuing to live. And that as we begin to look at it then, the church is always called in to stop a riot in the midst of it, but never to deal with the causes of it. We're therapists. We look at our social workers and they exist and are trained to do a job of simply giving out charity. It is not an accident that the only logical strategy for getting rid of welfare has come not from a social worker, but from a social psychologist, Clawett. Didn't come from a social worker. No one trained as a social worker in our society could come up with that. For his job was meant to be one of therapy. We're the therapeutic people that are meant to just keep things going along. And in fact, if we're to deal seriously, and if our talk of love is more important than the talk of charity, then we must develop strategies that make it possible for real change to come. Strategies that in fact create change. One of these would be Operation Breadbasket. A group of ministers in Philadelphia, got together, supposedly 400 strong. We sort of laugh about that supposedly. We know they were not quite 400, but supposedly 400 strong, and said to the businessmen of Philadelphia, if you do not hire Negroes, we will not buy your product at every level. And we found that there were a number of people that had sanitary engineers who were Negroes. And we asked where was the sanitary engineer's office, and we found it was the broom closet. They had the jobs always at the level of the sweeping the floor. We demanded jobs on every level within the structure. Now, another group of ministers in Chicago, dealing not out of therapy, but out of strategy, developed a new dynamic within that program that says to a merchant that if you're going to exist in black community, you must share the money you make by putting it in black banks. You must hire black people throughout the store, which is the old guideline. Any new building you build on black turf must be built by black people. And that you must allow black products to be on your shelf. And you must have your garbage picked up by black people. Now, the last seems sort of small to you, but there's $53 million worth of garbage a year in a city like Chicago. We're not talking about, shall we say, the normal college-oriented town. We're talking about a city of Chicago with a million black people alone. Just the garbage is worth $53 million a year, more than the combined black bank. You would begin to look at the story. The 14 black producers of products could not get them on black shelves in the ghetto. So that black people could not shop for black products in the places where most people shop, the supermarket. It was a strategy that began to create a set of dynamics that worked together so that a black minister 2 years ago was unable to go to a bank and borrow $150,000 without borrowing $150,000, picking up $125,000, and paying something like 36% on it over the period of time. Hear what I'm saying? That's robbery, but it's done largely by the people who are in the banking interest downtown who teach Sunday school at our churches, so of course that's business as usual. We begin to see then that those ministers go to their congregations and say, you will not buy certain products because they will not allow black people on their shelf. But when that's on the shelf, then we'll be able to hire other black people and cut down on the unemployment rate. Plus there comes a new respect so that we can also say to our young kids, you can become an engineer, you can become an architect. Of the number of black people who have trained for architecture in Chicago, only one of them is a member of a firm. All the rest of them have to become just draftsmen in white architectural firms downtown. So that we're talking about what develops a strategy for the urban situation that in fact deals with the realities of it in such ways that men can become independent rather than charity cases and deal with that conflict. I like to think of a particular kind of strategy that the Catholic Church worked. When Kennedy became president of the United States, I glorified, for what I think is a different reason than most. For if you would read, when the Irish came to this country in the 1840s after the potato famines in Ireland, they were poorer, in a sense, than the slaves, the black slaves in this country, or at least there was a price on our heads. The Irish were without any money. They were hated because they were Catholic. They did not know the ways of the cities into which they had come. This is the reason that the Irish built the railroad tracks across the West, because slaves were too valuable for that. Nobody with that much money was going to take a chance on getting an arrow in such a valuable piece of property. when we begin to look at that, you know, the real funny part of that property thing is it's still with us. When the new bills were passed, we were able to eat at the lunch counter, not because we were human beings, but because we were interstate comers. What I'm really saying is there's not a guideline from that slave past that is not with us now. And what we're about is breaking that master-slave relationship and the strategies that in fact do that. So that when Kennedy meant that a strategy had been worked by the Irish Catholic Church, that every Catholic priest was involved in organizing political groups around the Catholic churches in a day when politics meant more than politics do today. Read the new commission report on Rye. And in those days, politics meant something because they were close to the people. They organized politically around their churches. Boston became a symbol of that kind of Irish power. More than that, an Irish strategy. And as a result, they took over that state. And as a result, became a part of the mainstream of American life. For this didn't go on simply in Boston, but all over this nation. And Chicago has the fourth largest school system in the country, and it's Catholic. Is that this power, this force, built and created out of a Catholic strategy, something that made finally a young Irishman millionaire president of these United States. A strategy that in fact did work. They were not dealing with therapy. At the same time they were genuflexing and blowing out candles with the old people, they had their young people becoming the ward bosses and the precinct committeemen and becoming mayors and governors, so that a strategy, in fact, must be the kind of thing in which we work. Realize that this culture and its structures sees you and I as therapy to do its charity dealing. And that you and I, if we're concerned about love and all of the other fogarall that we give out on Sunday morning, if we're really concerned about it, we develop a strategy that in fact shows we love people and that we're the servants to people and that we make them independent. Problem is, we're afraid of strategies because it may end up creating people who don't do what we want them to do, when we want them to do, how we want them to do it, which is another form of charity. So that when we begin to see then, and we must see then that the fourth guideline upon which our strategies finally end is the creation of new institutions. We can no longer be dealing simply with strategies that react. You know, largely for the last 10 years, we've been reacting to structures. We've been reacting to institutions. We sit around and wait to see what they're going to do, and then we're going to say, no, you can't do that, you're bad fellas. And we've forgotten what Paul said, is don't forget, he says, that your real enemy, Timothy, is the principalities and powers of this world. And we have learned that you can't deal with principalities and powers with a few demonstrations here and there, and that in fact, those that control those principalities and power are as evil in the 20th century as in the first century. And there must be the development of new institutions, for power is inherent in institutions, not in individuals of goodwill. We've been acting out of the understanding that if you get enough people with goodwill saying, no, you can't do that, that that's going to change everything. Because we thought, in fact, that if we would show enough love, that America would react in love. If we would be able to show enough courage, at least America could react with political courage. If we showed enough concern for ourselves and for this nation, that at least America would meet us with concern, only to find, in fact, that America is too sick as structured to meet love with love and courage with courage and concern with concern. And so it's up to you and I, using the institutional base we have, to begin to create new institutions, not simply to react. And this must come on several different ways. That there must be the remaking of some institutions that already exist. The school system, for instance, in the ghetto must be remade. For the school system in the ghetto does not, in fact, educate black people. And the next phase of that, in Chicago, there's four different school systems. There's the one for the ghetto, there's the one for the poor white, there's the one for the suburbs, and if you're lucky, you go to Nutria High, which is somewhere close to what education ought to be. And that if we are to deal realistically, we must see that that institution that is supposed to educate does in fact educate. And if it means turning all the kids out of it for a year, as they're about to at least talk about in Milwaukee, is that then it must be done. That those institutions there must serve them, those that are already there. Now, we must be able to create black institutions and poor people's institutions from old models. The political structure, we haven't found a good option for it yet, but we found some means to work within it, like the Tennessee Voters Council, of which both of us are much familiar, to where we gathered across Tennessee black people's votes so that we elected the governor. Gave him 72,000 votes, and he made it in by 44,000. And I was on the executive committee. We went in to see him, and he didn't tell us that we elected him. He just told us the figure, and we were kind to him. We didn't remind him. And that there must be some making of new institutional style. Like right now in North Carolina, they're about to run a Negro for governor of North Carolina. Well, that's laughable if you think he's going to become governor of North Carolina. But that's not our point. 14 fellows came to the Urban Training Center from North Carolina. We sat down and figured out together a statewide pattern, which I had in mind according to UEC, and figured out four other statewide actions. And now they're running the Negro in order to gather that black power to create a new type of political institution to deal with power that has no love. So that out of our love, we can have enough power to deal realistically with this culture. We must have new kinds of models. People's colleges. I have a proposal right now for $2.5 million on Ford's desk for what I call an anti-seminary. Am I allowed to say that within these halls? Because the point being is, given the situation, we have something like 80,000 black pulpits to fill with an attrition rate in one of those denominations of 1,200 men, and we have less than 400 Negroes in all the seminaries of all the denominations. Realistically, then, we have to have a new institution that in fact serves black needs. And that the average black fellow, because of that school system and because we come to the ministry late, has to find a place to plug in. And in fact, there's not a place even to plug in. We must create new institutions, what I'm about. that we must take and rework some of the institutions that exist. In another way, some appendages. That school system, again, for instance, across Alabama, so we can get back to Wallace Kent. Across Alabama, I had eight cities, I had 16 study centers. To where what we did was to take kids who had just graduated from high school, but were not able to pass college entrance exams, because Mr. Wallace was in control of that school system that said that, in fact, black people were not supposed to go to college. So he controlled that high school system so that very few could ever get the opportunity. Because the jobs were controlled, very few, in fact, even if they made it, had the money to go. Set up study centers throughout a summer, and St. Louis became my real support in that process, and it happened to be the cardinal from here that gave the greatest support. I won't say not the Protestant hierarchy, but we'll just let it go at that. And what we did was to bring into Alabama a goodly number of students who were willing to work on subsistence during the summer. We worked with 1,100 kids, 150 of who had just graduated from high school that couldn't pass college entrance exams. At the end of the summer, 107 were with us. We put 107 of them in college at the end of the summer because they could pass the test. We put them in and got scholarships for that. Now, we have to make some new kinds of institutions, some new labor unions, some black seminaries, and some black church federations as well. What this says, then, if we're to create new institutional types, it means that there must also be, by the very nature of situations like the school system, like the thing I was giving you in terms of ministry, to where we have new training models and ideas. That if we were to look at 71st Street today, let's put it in another way. If, in fact, as kids were passing out a pamphlet in Chicago, I believe in Chicago, day before yesterday, that said, we must see that white merchants are manipulated out of black neighborhoods. Now, what if they are successful? Who is to take over the stores? There must be some new kind of training model. And that there must be the training of common folk for many new kinds of tasks. We must, in terms of that welfare worker, have a new kind of training course for welfare workers, a new kind of training course for ministry, whether they come out of the seminary or the non-seminary. Because what we find is that seminaries don't train many of anybody to go to a pulpit, black or white. And that a black man going into a white seminary is further away from his people when he gets out than when he went in.